Hi there, a quick note before the episode begins. Did you know that Mija has her own audiobook with exclusive and brand new material? It's called Mija Podcast, the audiobook, an exclusive and never-before-heard collection of memoirs and reflections by her creator, Lori Martinez, about what it meant to turn her own migration story into a fiction series. When you get Ochenta's audiobooks, you're directly supporting our independent audio series productions. You can find it on Libro.fm, Apple Books, Google Play, Storytel, BookBeat, and on your favorite audiobooks app. Also available in Spanish and French.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Bienvenidos and welcome to Mija on the Mic, a podcast that is celebrating the experiences of daughters of immigrants from around the world. I'm so excited for our guest today that we are actually doing in real life. This is a real studio that we're in. Crazy. Today, I'm so excited to invite podcast host and marketing expert, Sipora
Sidibe. Yes.
So tell us about your culture. This is the first question we ask all Mija guests.
Well, my culture is kind of plural. So I'm a French lady born and raised, and my parents are from Senegal. To be honest, I've been in Senegal only once in my life, and I was 16. So I only discovered my parents' culture at 16 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I would say that being like a French woman with like African culture, it's kind of complicated, to be honest. I think we will talk about it, but yeah, it's not an easy thing. And I kind of feel the same way of living as like Latinos, because like the immigration story is so here, it's so present in my parents' life that I cannot erase it. So even if I want to be like, I'm a Parisian, it's not possible.
Why? Why is it that you can't feel that kind of ownership about that Frenchness?
Because in France, and this is maybe political, but your color, your skin, your culture is always something that we will remind you. So even if you come and you say, I'm French, people will ask you, yes, but really, where are you from? Like, your parents, are they from France? And I'm like, yes, they have the like the ID card. So yes, they are French. So even if you want to say I'm French, people will ask you, no, but you are not really French, you know?
I always wonder about that, because some people take that question and they're like, sure, I'll explain where I'm from. And other people kind of take it as almost an offense. Like, what do you mean I'm from somewhere else? And so it feels like you're kind of seeing it between the two things, right? Because you do identify Senegalese.
Yes.
Without having been there.
Yes.
So having that experience, what was it like at home for you? So like the Senegalese culture, even if you didn't have it and you couldn't go back to the country necessarily, how did you kind of experience it at home?
Well, first the language. This is something funny, because I have, in France, we have what we call the carnet de santé. It's like the health, like notebook, like you have since you're like a baby. And you have like the evolution of like the baby, like from 0 to 1 year, for example, or even after. And in one of the page, there is one like medical, let's say, checkup that I had. And the doctor was saying that I didn't speak French. I only spoke my like my mother's language, so which is like Soninké. It's like one of a language from Senegal. And I'm always so surprised because I don't speak it. So I think language was the first thing that was from Senegal that I hear every day in my life since I'm a baby. Food, it's also a very important part. We have a lot of dishes, and like every weekend we had like all the dishes from Senegal. And during the week, my mom, she didn't have time to cook because it's like big meals and stuff. So it was French during the week and it was Senegalese during the weekend. And also family. So I had a lot of like uncles, aunties, cousins. And this is what, like, I had people I could look and they were like me. So this is also one thing that was part of my childhood and make me feel Senegalese. And music also. Music was really important. We had all those VHS with like video clips from like back home, like my parents back home. And so during like Friday nights, we would like just play it and we will be dancing. Well, the kids, not the parents. So we will be dancing and we will be like, because we didn't have Spotify or the radio.
Right.
So it was the only link with like the new music from there, for example. So yeah, I would say that all these different elements were part of my culture. And I also had the calls from my grandma or my aunties who were still there in Senegal. So each time I was like taking the phone, they were speaking the language. I could understand. I couldn't answer. So I was just like, mommy, this is for you.
I think that resonates so much with Miha and the experience of kind of being between the two. So I'm curious about, you know, how that community kind of shaped who you are and how also the saying that you're Franco-Senegalese, can you say that even? Do you, I mean, because I know the hyphenated identity is very American. We know this. How do you kind of navigate that here in France where it's not necessarily accepted to say that you're two things? I mean, this is from what I've, my own experience in seeing people talking about, oh no, you're French first.
Yes.
Kind of thing. So how did you get to even understand that? I imagine as a child, you don't see it at all.
Yeah,
and then when you get older, you're like, oh wait.
Yes. And I think that even my parents, they wanted us to be French first, to be like integrated. That's why I don't speak my parents' language, because my dad really wanted us to speak perfect French to be good at school. So he was saying like other people's kids that were talking the language, they were not good at school. So we didn't have to be the same.
Oh, harsh assimilation.
Exactly. So I think the first step in my head, I was like French. And then when I grew up, when I went to Senegal, when I saw people like me, I was like, yeah, but I'm not only French. So I have actually somewhere that is filled with people like me. So I started thinking, okay, so I'm not only French, I'm also Senegalese. So I was 16 when I decided that I was both. And then I went for Erasmus in Scotland.
Okay.
And I was always saying to people, I'm French. And people were just like, okay. They never
they don't ask the question. And I was like, passport proof or anything. They're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, it was more like, okay, so I'm French. So I came back to be only French. My French identity was back.
Okay.
And then I came back. and then people just again put me the Senegalese like etiquette. And now I feel that I am both, because we have like French character. I can't lie. I mean, I have like French things. When people see me doing things, thinking, I am a French person. So I cannot deny it. But since I'm an adult, I'm like trying to be more and more like in contact with my Senegalese
heritage,
roots.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. That resonates so much when you go abroad with your immigrant passport that you got, your passport privilege that your parents gave you. And then I had the same thing, because I always had the thing of being Latina and being from the States is a whole nother experience, but like the same thing of coming to France and people being like, you're American. And no one is questioning that. No one is thinking like your English isn't good or that, you know, you're not fully American. No, you're American in every sense of it. And so even I had the same questioning around, I'm both, though. You guys are saying I'm only American, but I'm also Colombian. And in France, there was like this kind of push and pull with those two things. So I want to know about like immigrant expectations in France. I think a lot of the time when we talk about the immigrant experience, it's like you move to another country to have better opportunities to start a family and do something different from, you know, where your country of origin is. Sometimes it's a lot of it is monetary, economic power and all these things. And so there's expectations around the daughter, the eldest daughter, the daughter of the immigrant family to do well, to succeed, and not necessarily follow a fun creative path. And being both of us on fun creative paths as creators and entrepreneurs, I would love to know, like, how does that like translate in France? Like, how did you experience this expectation here in French culture?
Well, it was hard because I had the pressure from my Senegalese parent. Like you said, I had this social pressure, like you have to be good. We have like done this sacrifice, so you have to be good at school and do a very good job and even provide for us like when we will be old. So you have this pressure.
You have to take care of me.
Exactly. So you're like, okay, so I cannot be an entrepreneur. I cannot be a creative person. So I will just go for good job, like for a big company. And this is what I did at the beginning. So I started doing like they asked me to do. And then 30s is coming and you're like, no, I can't do this anymore.
There's so many people who have that crisis of, I don't want to be a doctor or lawyer, mom, please accept. I want to be an actor.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're like, okay. But to be honest, I didn't tell them that I quit my job and that I started like my freelancing journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of lying, or just like not lying, but not saying anything about
the lie of omission.
Exactly.
And on the Sunday call, you didn't say, you just said, I'm working hard. You didn't say what I'm working on.
Exactly. Which is true.
Yeah.
So I was doing this for a moment. And then one day I just decided to tell the truth, but I waited to see that everything was fine, that I was actually having
business and that you know that you could say don't worry about me, because you worry about that.
Exactly,
right? There's this like concern of, of the intergenerational concern.
Exactly.
Mommy, I'm fine.
So you have to be the one saying it's okay,
it's okay. No, it terrified my parents when I came here, and that I wasn't trying to become like, I don't know, wasn't working for a big corporation or like wasn't hired by like a big company to do what I do. And that I decided to start my own thing. It was like nobody else in my family started a company. So it was like, what are you trying to do? Who's going to support you? What are you doing? Yeah. Because I almost feel like it's a safety net that they think that they've created, which, you know, in some senses, yes, because they give us the passport privilege, right? Now you are French. I am American. We have powerful passports. We can do things. You can go to Scotland. Be like, I'm French. And no one is going to say anything about that. And that's amazing. And so that's so cool that you get to kind of breaking cycles, right? That is the words that you chose to use. I want to hear about how you feel about this kind of breaking a cycle of expectations of what you're supposed to do as a daughter of immigrants.
Yeah, this is the key word, I think. So I'm the eldest of my family. We are five. And so I had a lot of pressure. I was like the third parent. I was like having a lot of responsibilities. And I was kind of a little mom. So I was doing everything like administrative stuff and so on. And then at 28, I decided to move and come here in Paris. And first, the geographical like distance really helped because I was not like close to them. I couldn't just drive and see what is happening there and so on. And yeah, it was kind of, okay, I can live without them. I can do whatever I want.
I can be a grown up.
So this was the first step when I was like, okay, so you can be like someone else, which is not like the family girl, the elders, the perfect girl who is doing everything that her parents are saying and so on. So this was a very good step for me. And then I broke the cycle when I decided that I didn't want to have kids. So I was like, I've been this all my life since I'm like a little girl. So I'm exhausted. So no, I don't want to be another mom for another baby or another child. So this was the second step. And today I think that I'm breaking the cycle by beginning to be the daughter, you know, like learning to be a daughter, learning to be a sister, because when you are like a third parent, you are not a sister for like your siblings.
Yeah, you're asking them to do things right. You're, you know, maybe imposing responsibility.
Yeah.
And that's a completely different experience. Exactly. You don't get to be friends with your siblings when you're in that space.
So I'm learning everything now. And it's hard because sometimes I just want to be, no, don't do this, or no, I recommend you do this. And I'm like, stop.
Yeah, you have to kind of keep it in, like, let them experience their life and just laugh at their mistakes.
Exactly.
Like you should as a sibling. Yeah. Instead of saying, no, you don't have to do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so interesting that you're kind of relearning your own definition, not only culturally, but also like in the family.
Yeah.
Because family is so important to our cultures, right? And you mentioned something about how like your family is that kind of community. Mm-hmm. How did that community react when you decided to do this? Have you fully come out to them as, I don't want to be a mom?
Yeah, I fully.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. Because for, I don't know if you have the same thing, but like in Latin culture and just even in my own family, like, As successful as you will be, as amazing as the work that you're doing, your greatest accomplishment will be having a child.
Yes.
So how did they take it?
Well, my dad was fine. He's a man. So I was like, okay, I don't need even your like advice, but it's okay. So it was like, you do whatever you want with your body and your life. But my mom, she's still hoping that I will change my mind because I didn't say it, but in Senegal, we have a Muslim culture.
Mm.
And in the Muslim culture, you always like do benediction.
Yeah.
To your daughter when she do something well for you, like when she give you money or pay you something, you just say like, I wish you will have a kid like you.
Blessings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't want kids. Don't say that. But she's always saying it, you know? So I think that she's still hoping that I will change my mind. She's not pushing. She's not like, each time I have her on the phone, she's not like, you have to be a mom and so on. But I can feel that
there's an expectation still.
Exactly.
I think that's really hard to deal with. Just even on the societal level, there's always going to be that questioning around, when are you going to do it? You're in your 30s. This is the time.
Yeah.
You know, if you think you don't want it, you'll decide differently in a couple of years. You don't know.
Exactly.
Freeze your eggs, you know?
Yeah.
But it's so wild to think about it also culturally, right? Because you have this, I expect you to do this, continue the family line. But I guess like, I wonder how it is for your siblings as well. Like, do you have the same kind of questioning around them? I mean, as the eldest, do they also kind of see your decision and react in a specific way? Or,
well, I know that my sister, they don't have any, they haven't said to me like, I don't want kids or I want kids. So they are still, I think, thinking about it. My little brothers, on the other hand, they are like, I want to be a dad. So they are like, I want it.
Yeah.
It's like clear. So yeah, I think, and my mom, she was scared of that I will be like influencing the others. And I'm like, no, I mean, at the end, those guys are going to be dads. So it's okay. I didn't like.
That's so cool though, that you have such a good relationship with your siblings as well. Now that you're, like you said, becoming almost like a better sister.
Well, it's a work in progress, to be honest. I think it's more fluid with my brothers, but with my sisters, it's a bit more complicated. Mm. Even in age, so I'm closer with like the daughters, and the baby brothers are like the last ones.
Yeah.
So I have a different relationship, and it's like if they haven't really known me, so I can reinvent myself more easily. So yeah, it's easy to do this transition with them. But with the girls, it's a bit more complicated. So work in progress. I think it will be like very hard
struggle.
And
with my own siblings, it's because I have several, it's the same kind of questioning around like expectations and like, how are each of us going to live our dreams, kind of thing.
Exactly.
So speaking of dreams, I would love to know your, I guess maybe going around back to expectations and like the questions of the dreams that our parents have and the dreams that we have for ourselves. Like, what is the French dream versus the American dream? Like, what is the expectation?
I think that the French dream is to have a decent job and then buy a house. And I think it's a kind of pretty simple life, you know?
That's so interesting, because I always think about what that dream is now, because so many people can no longer buy homes. So many people can, you know, look at work differently now. Yeah. So like, what becomes of that dream? What is it now?
I think it's very changing, and it's kind of maybe becoming like in the US, where you're like not being defined by your job. Young people, I mean, I'm talking with my brother, and it's like, I know that I will not do this job my entire life. He already know that maybe in his 30s, he will be changing and maybe have another job.
Yeah, more adapted.
Exactly.
To that.
Yeah.
It's already a shock that for our parents that we change jobs every three, 4 years.
So imagine with this new generation, it will be like...
Tomorrow I'm going to be a K-pop dancer. Not to say that that's a bad thing, guys. It's not. It's just that I think that that generation has done, you know, they're more open to these creative careers.
Exactly.
And being like, yeah, maybe it'll work or maybe not. They have security that we didn't have.
That's the point.
As well. I think as daughters of immigrants, we're always asking ourselves, like, is this safe for me to do? Do I dare, you know, try to do this without a safety net? Exactly. Because we've seen our parents suffer, or we've seen, you know, how much they struggled to make it so that we are safe. So when you take that away and you're like, I want to have my dream, it's so hard to accept.
It is.
Oh my gosh. And how do you deal with that? You personally, like, how have you emotionally kind of accepted that change in your dream?
It was hard because you have the practical thinking and like, I'm not like from a very easy family, like rich family. So because most of people here that are entrepreneurs, to be honest, they have like the parents behind.
They're bien, bien, is it?
Bien, bien, is it?
Whereas we're more, because we're daughters of immigrants, it's more like, no one is sponsoring this. I'm the only one doing this. I can only support myself.
Yeah. So you cannot be like wrong. You have to be the good thing. Yeah. Because if you don't, you have to go back to work like a normal job.
Yeah. And so much pressure.
Yeah.
It's so much pressure.
Exactly. So I think that I'm still in this... You know, kind of, I'm okay, but there is the cliff, you know, at any time I can just work and then it's the end and you have to go back to work. So I'm not really like at peace, like saying, okay, I'm fine. I have found my perfect path. I know that if I do this and this, it will be perfect.
Yeah.
I'm still like with this adjustment, like, so yeah, it's not very easy every day. I wish I would have like this safety nest, as you said, with my family and so on, but it's not the case. But it's kind of the magic of like daughters of immigrants. It's like you have to find new solutions to reinvent yourself
and innovate.
Exactly.
Like, find a community and do it your own way, because no one's gonna help you make it happen.
That's the point. And I think this is the difference between maybe I'm like doing an extrapolation, but when you're not having all this background pressure, you don't have time to just look at the day to day.
Yeah.
You have to think ahead because you don't know what is going to happen. And I think that the day that I will be like, okay, I'm fine. I'm just enjoying the day. This will be the sign that I'm fully French.
It's like a battery charging. I'm 100% French now. I'm curious about what you feel about the word generational trauma, because it feels like it's so trendy to talk about that, like
that's true
in that way. The struggle of our immigrant parents, how we are kind of living past it, growing from it, being inspired by it. But we call it a trauma. And it feels, I don't know, I don't like that it's a negative thing.
Yeah, me too.
Because it is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
They worked so hard. Exactly. And, you know, some people don't have as good relationships with their families. But if you do, then that struggle is actually something that makes you unique.
Yes.
And stronger.
Exactly.
And more powerful.
Yeah.
And owning that is what makes it powerful. So I don't know. I don't like the word, calling it trauma. Generational inspiration, generational... I don't know what word could work. Maybe there's a French word.
That's true. It's very like, I don't know. I mean, but you know, I think it's like maybe a process, because we are this generation who like put this word, you know, we decided that this is generational trauma. It was not something trendy, like
back like in the 90s and like when our families were coming to these countries, they were not calling it that.
Exactly. So maybe we are the generational trauma generation. and that the next generation is going to find another world, because they will be actually without trauma, because we will be the one healing everything, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah, maybe it will be generational healer or something,
or
like
generational
this.
Power. Or yeah. Something like that. I love that you mentioned that, because we had this conversation before. We hang out, by the way.
Yes.
we talked about how the new generations, like, you know, our younger siblings or even those who are, you know, born later on in the country, they feel more French. They feel more American. They feel so much of a little bit of a separation between the original culture. And they don't have this questioning at all. They're like, I'm multicultural, whatever.
Yeah.
Hashtag whatevs. And I'm like, it would be so cool to just not have these questions.
Life like, will be easier.
Life will be easier. Miha podcast will be irrelevant in like 20 years time. It really will be, because like these new kids, they're not asking these questions anymore. They're like, yeah, I am. And what? Who are you to tell me I'm not French? Je viens d'où? I'm from here.
That's so true. And I wish that for this new generation, because it's not very healthy to be in this kind of
limbo. Let's bring all of these questions, and how are you doing it with your podcast?
Yeah. So, Tant que je serai noire, or As Long as I'm Black, is a podcast that I created 3 years ago, because, as I said, this is where I decided to not be a mother, like really coming out and saying it out loud. And I just wanted to create a space where like Black women could just talk about this topic. Mm. I realized that as a Black woman, you cannot really have this leisure to choose, like, in like people head, Black women are like mothers. There is no question. So I was like, but why do we have to follow this lead? I mean, I don't want this. So I just wanted to create the debate about it, and a lot of women really related to it, saying, yeah, that's so true. Like mom saying to me, I've never thought about it. Like I became a mother, but I never asked myself
why
and if I really wanted to do it, or if it's the society which like pushes me to do this. So I was like, oh my god, we have to do something about this. So I started to like interview like women and ask them like why they decided to be a mother, and if not, how the culture is like pushing them to do it.
Yeah.
And at the beginning it was only like women experiences, and then I realized that like for a Black woman in the history, we didn't really have the choice. Our body was like a public property, you know, slavery, colonization. And even today, like, I don't know if you see like the situation in Mayotte. It's like an island, a French island, where there is a lot of Black people. And they decided to control birth, because they think that there is a lot of babies. So they are like going to ask women to like do forced sterilization. And I'm like, this history is just repeating itself.
Yeah.
Like we don't have
agency.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm so shocked. I mean, and this is why I decided to talk about this topic. And today it is more shifting into justice, reproductive justice.
Okay.
So who has the right to choose to be a mother or no, in which conditions? And this is something that is from the US, but I think that we need it in France as well.
Yeah.
Because we have the same
discussion.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
So this is how Tant que je serai noire is born. We have a lovely community Instagram. I've met a lot of women, incredible women. And even if I'm not a mother, sometimes I can listen to a mother story and I'm like, oh, I can relate. I mean, we have this experience that is similar. And at the end, I just wanted to like say to people that we are human. Like, even if I'm not a mother, even if I'm Black, at the end, I'm just a woman. And we have all our struggles, but at the end, we are just women, you know? So that's why I created it. And I hope that, as you said, next generation will not have to think about those questions, and that it will be natural to say, oh, no, I just don't want kids. That's it.
Yeah.
No questioning, you know?
That's so inspiring. What is something that you learned that you were surprised by when you're doing these interviews and talking to these women?
Well, first I learned that kids are cool. Because at the beginning I was like, oh my God, kids, blah, blah, blah. How do you do that? So I realized that it can be a very like joyful for some women, and I can understand it. I also realized because in my website, it says, tant que je serai noire, serai-je mère? Like, as long as I'm black, will I be a mother?
Mm.
And this question is actually for me because, as I said, I was like a little mommy.
Right, because you're the mother in your community, yeah, in a way, because
exactly.
You take that role on.
Yes.
No matter, like, as soon as you're of age to become a mother, and entre guillemets, then you have that questioning.
Exactly.
That's so interesting. It's so community-based, right?
Exactly. So I was like, oh my God, this is like my therapy. Mm. So it's actually really helped even me in my journey to like discover what I really want, what I don't want. Mm. And yeah, it's like a lot of questioning being the eldest. So yeah, it was really helpful even for my personal, let's say,
like questioning journey.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. I love that because it also brings it back to Mija, where in Latin culture, you're everyone's daughter.
Yeah.
And so your success is everyone else's success.
Yeah.
And everyone is Mija, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's so interesting that in your culture, it's like, no, I'm mother.
Yeah. I have daughters. I am the one saying Mija.
You know, that I think that's solidarity as well.
Yes.
Like you're supporting other women within the community.
Yeah.
And that's more valuable.
Yeah.
And from your space, if you're not a mother, you can be a mother in so many ways
to
other people.
And what I learned also is that because you were talking about this double identity, being French, Senegalese, and at one time I wanted to just like cut with the family saying, okay, no more of this shit.
Mm.
I'm going to be like the other French people and just say, I don't want to be a family person anymore.
Oh.
So I tried this, but it's not possible.
You can't do it.
I can't.
You can't just shut down.
I can't.
Because it's community-based cultures.
Yeah.
You can't just be a solo dolo.
Exactly. And this was another slap like, no, you're not only French. You also have this. And I tried. I'm always saying to my friends, I've tried, but they are not leaving me.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's come to the end. I would like for you to share an anecdote about your childhood growing up in Senegalese Paris.
Yes.
Do you have a cherished memory about your childhood here?
Yeah. So it's a very like interesting memory. I was like maybe 6 or 7. And so I'm from Haute-Savoie, so it's like in the mountain and stuff. So during summertime, my dad would take us and we will go like for a barbecue or like just swimming and like playing with my sisters and my cousin. But we only had one car. So my dad had a very like huge car with a very big trunk. So some of us will be like in the trunk. To go there. And I remember once we would be stopped by a policeman and they're so shocked, but like in a good way. They're like laughing and saying, oh my God, what is happening in this car? And they just let us go. We could do like the rest of the travel and be at like playing at the lake and so on. But I was like, oh my God, this is something that today we will not be able to do that. But I could feel like my dad really wanted us to like have this kind of joy being like normal kids and go back to school and say that during summer we did this and this. But he did it with the like what he had.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is something I can never forget. And it's a way to remind me that don't forget where you're coming from. Even if you become easy, you don't have to forget that once you had to share a car with all your siblings in the trunk.
Oh my gosh, girl, I can relate. I've been there too. We did have the same thing. Literally going to a lake. She's Mija, pero French. All right, we're going to wrap this up now. I want to ask you some speed round questions. We ask all of our Mijas speed round questions.
Okay.
So ask du tac au tac, okay?
Okay.
All right, so what language do you swear in when you accidentally touch a hot plate?
French.
What's your favorite food?
Yassa.
What is that?
It's like chicken with the onions, a salsa with rice. Very yummy.
Song that you've had in your head this week?
Oh my God, Jaja, Aya Nakamura.
What's your last Google search that you feel comfortable sharing?
I think it's like around like this generational trauma thing. Yeah, I'm really into it those days. Yeah.
What is your most embarrassing dream that you had?
I think the most embarrassing one is to be rich, like to be this French woman who could just do whatever she wants without like being suffering and thinking twice. Yeah, I think I just wanted this légèreté, you know.
You wanted to be Oprah Winfrey.
Yes, exactly. Or Emily in Paris, you know, like la la la, everything is perfect. I can do whatever.
Okay, and what is your biggest dream right now? What is something that you're aspiring to?
To be my own business woman, like not having any barriers, just like, yeah, I think this French dream of you can do it because you work hard at school. And yeah, I think it's just that being able to have my, not CDI, but very comfortable
way of life. Your safety net.
Yes, exactly. But by myself, not like working for someone else, you know.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been so much fun. Yes. I've had so much fun. We could keep going for hours. So tell us where we can find you.
Yeah. So in Instagram, Tant que je serai noire, in the website of the podcast. So tweet, how do you say that? www.
Yeah.
Tant que je serai noire.com. And in any like listening platforms, if you want to listen to the podcast, it's in French. I'm sorry. But yeah, this is where you can find me.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laurie.
Yay. Thanks for listening. This is Miha on the Mic, a season of reflection on our shared experiences as daughters of immigrants. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll be sharing stories like these and inviting guests to share theirs. Follow us on Instagram at Miha Podcast, that's M-I-J-A Podcast, and leave us a note if you like this story. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode. This is a production of Studio Ochenta, a Latina-owned multilingual podcast studio dedicated to raising voices across cultures. For more from Studio Ochenta, follow us at Ochenta Podcasts on Instagram. That's O-C-H-E-N-T-A Podcast with an S on Instagram. P.S. Don't forget, this season is also about you. If you have a story you'd like to share, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, I invite you to reach out on Instagram at Miha Podcast and leave us a message with a short story or memory of yours that warms your heart. We'll read it out loud on the show. Hasta pronto. Ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Did you know that Miha has her own audiobook with exclusive and brand new material? It's called Miha Podcast, the audiobook, an exclusive and never-before-heard collection of memoirs and reflections by her creator, Lori Martinez, about what it meant to turn her own migration story into a fiction series. When you get Ochenta's audiobooks, you're directly supporting our independent audio series productions. You can find it on Libro.fm, Apple Books, Google Play, Storytel, BookBeat, and on your favorite audiobooks app. Also available in Spanish and French.